And we also then were introduced to the anti-vaccine movement, which is much linked to this quack treatment. So these parents are also in the belief that autism is caused by vaccines, primarily MMR vaccine, and that they can recover their children if they bleach the vaccine damage out of them. That's basically the gist of what's going on.
Welcome to Social Fabric. In this program, we'll bring you conversations with people discussing their passion and the interaction with their community. We explore how different jobs, careers, or achievements can inspire us to make small changes to improve our lives within our own community. You can find more episodes on socialfabric.ie or wherever you get your podcast. The program is also broadcast weekly on Dublin's Near FM 90.3.
My guest this week is Fiona O'Leary. Fiona has been campaigning against bogus treatments for conditions such as autism. This is my conversation with her.
Can I call you up, oh Alice, on a Friday night? We could reminisce on old days and we could talk a while. Just sit and talk a while.
So Fiona, look, we get started because I know you're busy. You're a busy woman at the moment. Well, you seem to be busy all the time. But so I'm here with Fiona O'Leary. When I say I'm here, we're actually speaking remotely. Unfortunately, last time I was down in your neck of the woods, we couldn't meet up. But you're in the lovely part of the Southwest. That's where I like to start, actually. Tell me a bit about the Southwest and what's it like for you living down there.
Well, I moved to Ireland in 1981. So I was born in London in 1971 to Irish parents that had obviously emigrated for work, etc. And I've been living in West Cork ever since, so nearly 37 years now. And it's beautiful. I've raised my family here. I have five lovely kids and I'm married to Tim. And we're really just living in an amazing place, and it's a great place to raise children as well. Very safe and very cosmopolitan, I suppose. That's one thing I love about West Cork, is that we are a very multicultural community, and all walks of life down here, so it makes it very vibrant and very artistic. So there's a great music scene here, which is a passion of mine, as you know, music. So a great place to live all around.
And so you moved there, you were only 10, and what was it like growing up there with an English accent?
It was because when I grew up in Wimbledon, you know, where the tennis is in London, so when I came to Ireland, it was really hard for me to understand the West Cork accent, and likewise for my friends that I made here in school. And, one thing I can say about children is that they don't care about that stuff. They don't care about language or accents. We just played with each other and mixed together really well. But, even to this day, you know, I still have people ask me where I'm from, and I'm from West Cork, you know. I suppose I didn't really lose that accent, but when I was younger, when I came here first, I mean, it was very, very strong, you know, a very, very strong accent. And my mum and dad would have had, I suppose, neutral accents because they lived so long in London. It's really something that isn't that important, really. But I think a lot of people take issue with that, which is sad.
Yeah, I know. The reason I wanted to ask you as well, because we have a few listeners now from, interestingly enough, from America and from Australia, and and it's good. And I always like to give an idea of where we are, what we're talking about, and what's it like now as a community? What's Cork like?
It's very busy. I mean, you know, we have there's a lot of arts down here and a lot of musicians living here. And, you know, we really kind of work together. And I suppose, you know, my campaign work, that's very important, that we keep working together, different cultures, different religions, different backgrounds, and keep that alive. And so it's a very big tourist industry. And I would have grown up in the hotel pub trade myself. So that's what my parents did. So I was pulling pints from an early age and, you know, making food, etc. And really, West Cork would really be mostly about that. We have some factories here, but it's really all about tourism because it's so beautiful. The beaches we have here are incredible. So it's a big, big area for tourism mostly.
Brilliant. Well, I think you mentioned to me when we got in touch via Twitter, and I really appreciate your time. I know you've been busy with, especially in the last couple of weeks.
Great.
But I like the idea of, we, you know, we, we're quite democratic. I like to give everybody their time to talk about anything they want to talk about. And but you mentioned your passion is very much music and writing is two of the things you do. So I think we start off with the first song you gave me, which was Don Henley, Boys of Summer. Why'd you pick that one?
Oh, this is a really, really personal song for me. Because when I was growing up, back in the 80s, we didn't have, you know, downloads and all this. So to get a song, to have that song, you'd have to record it off the radio. And I remember I was trying for months and months to try and get Don Henley's Boys of Summer. I was brought up on the Eagles and I've seen them live and I've seen the Eagles live as well. But I remember the day it happened and I just come in from school and my dad called out, the Boys of Summer is coming on the radio, because back then DJs would announce what was next. And I remember running for my tape recorder and my little cassette and putting it in, and I was so excited. And I remember getting the whole song, and it's, you know, the complete, they didn't cut it off at the end. And it was kind of a song, it is a song that really is kind of a bond between me and my father, because we had a turbulent relationship and I haven't seen my father in years. It's a long story. So that song really is really about him, mostly. And it's an amazing, I probably think, one of the best pop songs of all time. Nobody on the road, nobody on the beach. I feel it in the air, the summer's out of reach. Empty lake, empty streets, the sun goes down alone. I'm driving by your house, though I know you're not. You mentioned children. I know you we'll get to your companion in a minute, but you mentioned children earlier on, and you have five children, you said? I have five children, aged 26 down to 9. I have twins who are 11. I have a 14-year-old son. They're wonderful. I have two girls and three boys, and I have two autistic children. And I suppose I just want to mention again today that autism is a difference. It's not a disease or a disorder, which is often, you know, this language around autism is very important, and they're wonderful. It's a busy family. You know, we have a lot of pets as well, and but we all really kind of work together through music. And music is, for me, probably one of the best therapies that can really help autistic people. So we write songs. We're singers. I've got my kids now playing guitars and drums. We're forming a band, actually. We have a little Facebook page called Trouble in Love, if anyone wants to check it out, and kind of combination of covers on our own songs as well.
Okay, that's interesting you say about the autism, and the spectrum is quite wide. And and I know I just had a coffee before I came into the studio with a friend of mine, and his son has cystic fibrosis. And again, it's a disease, but yet, you know, it's a disability. But it's just the way we talk about these things sometimes, there's a lot of taboos and a lot of misunderstanding. So give us a feel for what it's like to have two autistic children. What age are they, two autistic guys?
My oldest is 26. I have Asperger's as well. I was diagnosed 6 years ago when I was 42, in 2013. And like you said, it is a spectrum, and there are no two people the same on that spectrum. You know, my sons have challenges. I'm not going to deny that, but they've also got great abilities. And I think that's the most important thing when you're trying to understand autism. We all know what it is, but understanding seems to be the problem. The autistic people can learn. It's just done in a different way. So when you introduce kind of tools in school, etc., they can make great achievements in education. And there is, you know, a general lack of supports out there. It's very hard to get supports for your children, and the government really needs to do something about that. And it very much depends on where you're living. We're lucky in West Cork because we have Coaction, and they're a very good service provider, and they've been incredibly supportive with my eldest son. Like I said, he's 26 now, so he would be every day going to their services. He's learning to paint, computer skills, all of those things, and he's having social interaction, which is very difficult for autistic people. So it's really about communication and social interaction. They're the two things that autistic people find challenging. And I suppose it's really about acceptance as well, to accept that it's all right to be different and to learn in a different way and to express mostly in a different way. I think that, you know, it's really, the world needs to understand that more than we have to change who we are to fit in, you know? We're outside of the box, and that's a good thing.
Absolutely. Am I correct in saying that Adam Harris, with his As I Am, is doing a great job in terms of education? Because I know he's been in my kids' schools several times to explain how he understands things and how he sees things. And so that's the type of support you're talking about in education.
But it is, and I think that there's... you know, the only way to really understand what autism is to talk to autistic people themselves. I think for many years we've kind of been talking about it, but not actually engaging with the autistic community. And that's where we failed the autistic community. And Adam is refreshing because he is on the spectrum. So, and we're here to talk to you. We don't bite, you know. There's nothing to be afraid of. And I've had some very funny comments, like even made to myself over the years, that I can kind of laugh at, but some people can be very rude and very nasty, you know, when you mention, oh, I have an autistic child or something like that. And I think because the narrative is being really controlled by not autistic people, but by charities that make a big profit off the backs of autistic people. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these charities have no autistic people on the board. So I suppose As I Am is important because Adam is on the spectrum, and that makes it very important going forward. And we are becoming more clued into females on the spectrum, because for years, females weren't even recognised at all. To get a diagnosis as a woman is really, really difficult. And my own experience has been extraordinary. It's based mostly, autism is based on male subjects. And obviously, there's autistic women, but they were kind of misdiagnosed or not listened to, which has led to a lot of females developing, you know, mental health issues and being given diagnoses that they didn't have, which is terrible. So we need to look at it as an individual diagnosis, male or female, forget that, look at the person. And like everyone on the spectrum has their own challenges and they're different to the next person on the spectrum.
Wow, because that's really interesting. You're talking about male and female, and you were diagnosed when you were 42, you said?
42, yeah. I was in college, I was in UCC studying autism. And my lecturer was a female. I mean, for years, I had, you know, gone to my own doctor and asked, could I be on the spectrum? Because I could see, I mean, I knew, I mean, from even a very early age, as a very young child, that I wasn't like my siblings or my peers, and I had problems, social interaction, even communication. I suppose that's important, that when you talk to someone, just because I'm talking to you doesn't mean that I don't have problems with language. My son would have problems with language and he can talk. There's a lot more than just opening your mouth and, you know, putting the words out there. And some nonverbal autistic people can be better at communicating than verbal people. So it's a very complex issue. And then there was sensory stuff. So that's very important for autistic people, that sound sensitivity, foods, tactile, there's a whole, you know, array of different things. So I was having huge difficulties, I suppose, when I was working, you know, meeting with my peers, going into shops with lights and everything. I was fainting a lot. I was actually falling down, and it was really due to the anxiety of sensory issues. And I was kind of, you know, denied a diagnosis, I suppose, is the right wording. And when I did get my diagnosis, I got my files. Which literally, it was so obvious I was on the spectrum. I was just not allowed that diagnosis. So I think there is a bias there. It's not as bad now, but so many women I've spoken with around the world, hundreds of women who have gone through the same experience, because girls can present differently, and this is what it's about. So girls might internalize a lot more than males, so they're not picked up as young children, and that's the problem. It's really kind of, they're looking at very rigid criteria in diagnosis. Most people have moved forward with that now, and they're recognizing females more. But there are still people coming to me like saying, I can't get a diagnosis. Where can I get help or support? So females are very much let down in this area.
Okay. Wow. Okay. I'm going to ask you a little bit more about that. But Hand in Glove by The Smiths. Great song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's that's my hobby and I song. So I met my husband, Tim, I was 17, and I was a big Smiths fan. And my brother, I was really annoyed. He went to see the Smiths in the 80s and he wouldn't take me to the concert. I never forgave him for that. But that song, I suppose, is kind of the beginning of our relationship, and we cover that song now, myself and my hubby. We do it together, and we actually sang it on Woody Island last summer, and it was really bizarre because there was always tourists there, and they were doing like traditional music. So my husband said, we'll sing a song. So we start singing Hand in Glove, and the heads are turning, you know. The sun shines out of our behind. It's a great track. I mean, and Johnny Marr and Morrissey were a great team. I don't like Morrissey's politics. So I just want to put that out there because he is an a-hole when it comes to politics. He's very much with the far right now. But I still recognise him as being one of the greatest writers. And I think the Smiths were probably, you know, one of the best pop bands ever.
Obviously, then, based on your children, your diagnosis, and so on, that's your campaigning. That's how you came on my radar through Twitter. It was about the campaigning. And tell me a bit about the campaigning. When did you start and why you started and all of that?
I was in college and I was studying, and part of my assignment, oddly enough, was to look at kind of bogus autism cures. And there's hundreds. I mean, I just want to let you know that there's benign ones, like if you eat broccoli, you'll be cured of autism, or dolphins will cure you, or, you know, looking at the sun in a certain way. But then you have really dangerous things like MMS, which is a bleach. There's unregulated blood products being injected to autistic children. There's stem cell treatments. There's so many dangerous things. And I couldn't believe it. And a lady approached me on Facebook at the time, and she told me that this group called the Genesis 2 Church were coming to Ireland, and they were offering bleach as a cure for autism. And I was like, haha, that's hilarious, you know, what are you talking about? But I looked into it and discovered they were holding a seminar, and I immediately, you know, contacted them. And it was very strange. It was like they wanted to, all done hiddenly, you know, through an email, show us a photo of yourself, you can't say this, you have to do this. And I discovered that basically they were saying they could cure autism with bleach. This product is a bleach. It's been tested, and they were telling parents of autistic children that autism is caused by worms and parasites, and that this bleach would basically corrode these fictitious worms and your child would be cured. I mean, it's probably the most craziest thing I've ever heard of. I mean, it's abuse. So little autistic children and some adults are still, because this is still going on, even though it's banned, it's not banned in other countries, and it's still being administered here in Ireland in a secret way, forced to drink this up to 20 times a day, forced to have enemas of this bleach, horrendous side effects, vomiting, fevers, kidney, liver failure, hair falling out. I mean, there was groups on Facebook that we got shut down, but some still remain. It's just terrible. So I kind of just threw any spare time into that campaign, and I started reaching out to others. I have a colleague in the UK, Emma, who's done great work. I have a friend in Ireland, Sinead, that's helping. There's lots of people doing this, voluntary. We don't get paid by Big Pharma like we're accused of. And we built, I suppose, a movement, not just focusing on the bleach product, but on this whole area of quackery, I suppose, is the word, in relation to autism. And we also then were introduced to the anti-vaccine movement, which is much linked to this quack treatment. So these parents are also in the belief that autism is caused by vaccines, primarily MMR vaccine, and that they can recover their children if they bleach the vaccine damage out of them. That's basically the gist of what's going on. And you know, I've suffered horrendous harassment. I mean, this is the thing, when you do go out there and you speak about this, you know, we got it in the papers very quickly. RT Primetime did a really great documentary called The Bleach Cult. Then the BBC followed up, and my friend in England and other people had, you know, documentaries in America. So we kind of had this huge exposure on this product. And some countries like Ireland have done great work, and they've banned this product. Others haven't. And what we're fighting for, and what we will get, is legislation eventually. We know in Ireland now that Kate O'Connell has done great work in relation to bringing in legislation around cancer quackery. So we want the same for autism, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get the government to bring in a law to protect autistic people from all quack treatment.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I was going to ask you next, because just this week there was all of conversation about the cancer treatment. There were some products sold on the internet, Miracle Cure. So that's the danger, I suppose. And I will get to the social media and the harassment and so on in a minute. But so I suppose your campaigning has been through social media and in local papers and so on. And you've seen some changes. You have made some changes over the last few years, and that's what you're...
Most importantly, I suppose, is that I'm involved in investigations with the Gardaí and with the HPRA, and I have given evidence, I don't know, four times in courts here in Ireland, and we did prosecute someone in 2016. Patrick Murlihan was found guilty of manufacturing and selling MMS, and there's only, I think, one other person prosecuted in the world. That's in America, in Washington. So it was a very important development in our campaign work to have someone prosecuted in this area in a criminal way. And there are more, actually, in the pipelines. I was in Dublin last year giving evidence for a fitness to practice hearing in relation to a dentist that was involved in this. So it's kind of ongoing. I suppose when you make statements with the Gardaí and with the authorities, you're kind of tied to them. And, you know, like I said, I have a lot of harassment, and sometimes I felt like I don't want to be involved. I don't want to give evidence because of that harassment. But you don't have a choice. Once you do that, you have to, you know, follow through. So I could be doing this till I die, so to speak, because it takes a long time for these investigations to get a result. It took 4 years actually for that one person to get prosecuted, but it was an important step, and I really am very grateful for the HPRA taking this so seriously. They did very good work.
Okay, so if you see her, say hello, Bob Dylan.
Bob, yeah, I mean, what can you say about Bob? You know, as a writer myself, he would be someone, I thought him and Cohen and Lennon, John Lennon, are people that I would just really admire as songwriters. But that album, Blood on the Tracks, is a masterpiece. I dare anyone to challenge me not on that. But that song, I don't know, it's really personal to me. It's a song I get real comfort in. You know, if I'm feeling stressed, I put that on my headset and it does wonders for me. And I love the musical arrangements. There's a Spanish-y kind of feel with the guitar. And I think he sings great on this. I really think that, you know, Bob Dylan can be, you know, sometimes an unusual singer, but I really think Bob puts so much of his vocal ability into the song, and it's beautiful, a beautiful ballad, and the lyrics again are amazing.
If you see her, say hello. She might be in Tangier. She left here last early spring. Is living there, I hear. Say for me that I'm all right, though things get kind of slow. She might think.
So it's fair to say we haven't met. I only did a bit of research online, and I'm always fearful of the online because there's all sorts. And it's fair to say that your controversial figure, I suppose, is one way to describe it. You know, there's all sorts of things about you, good and bad. But what really attracted me to talk to you was the vitriolic nature of some of the stuff I read. I was like, nobody can be that bad to get this type of treatment online. And that's you kind of hinted when you were saying through the campaign you've been threatened, you've done number of videos discussing this. So tell me a bit of the extent of what has been done to you so far. I mean, what in terms of threat? And I don't want to get into the specifics because I'm sure there's investigations going on. But just to give an idea, is social media can be quite a scary place.
Well, it wasn't, I suppose, like you get name-calling, which is kind of common on Facebook. You know, I never really engage with these people because it doesn't serve any purpose. So I block and I just move on. But I started to get different kind of harassment, especially last year. I think the last year has been the worst, actually. When I was due to give evidence at this fitness to practice hearing, there was blogs written, a lot of blogs. I know one of the authors of this blog is somebody we've reported to the authorities, but they're hiding in Mexico as we speak. And it was unusual. The kind of effort that went into it kind of really scared me. They had managed to target my family members, even my mother. They put out horrendous defamation, claiming that I work for the government, that I've even been accused of murdering someone in America, this doctor who was giving quack treatments who committed suicide, but apparently, no, that was my fault. So I've been called a murderer. I've been told I'm earning up to $500,000 a year. I have a carer's allowance. I have literally never got 1 cent for the work I've done to date, not a penny. I've never been paid for any newspaper stories. You don't get paid to give quotes in the paper. And but it was just, it was so intense. And then I had a series of messages saying that I needed to be taken out. So they then took a photograph of my home, put it online, inviting people to come and beat me up in the town square in where I live. And these blogs were then actually sometimes printed up and posted to family members here in West Cork. It was awful. So that was last year. And then this year and the end of last year, I've had a lot of harassment from people in far-right groups. I suppose racist is the only word to call them. Horrendous. I mean, much different to the kind of quacks and the MMS lot. This was a new kind of, you know, harassment that I'd never seen before. And I've had to go to the guards, and I've made statements, actually, even again recently, because the day before yesterday I woke up, there was a video on YouTube of a man with a bag over his head saying that I should be basically taken out. It's just unbelievable. And I do think it's because of these far-right groups who are very much linked to a lot of these quack treatments that we're talking about. So what we have are maybe far-right political groups, kind of racist people, you know, who are conspiracy theorists as well, and they support the anti-vaccine movement. They encourage parents to give quack treatments. So that is the scary part, is that they are getting kind of leverage through far-right political groups. And it's starting here in Ireland. We had meetings cancelled recently by a group that's forming in Ireland called ACI, and their leader has threatened me on YouTube videos. They tried to come to West Cork. We've had them cancelled. And it's an incredibly hard fight. You know, there's a group of people, not just myself, there's some great campaigners out there that are putting all their energy, because we want to protect people. We want Ireland to be open for all people. We don't want to, you know, kind of go back to the medieval times. And these people are also against rights for women, for reproductive rights, etc. And so I'm literally being attacked by quacks, racists, pro-life movement, and anti-vaxxers all at the same time. And they all kind of help each other out. So maybe they don't agree with the MMS bleach, but I don't like her anyway, so I'll help you attack her. I mean, I've woken up today to an image of me. I'm on 4chan, this horrendous site, and 8chan, like the deep web. I've been doxxed there. And it's me, and it's my face contorted with autistic screeching. They're very ableist, so they don't like people that have disabilities or are autistic. They are anti-LGBT. We're dealing with very nasty people here. And it is hard. I'm not going to deny it. I want to just make that clear. It does upset me, but I've got great support. I've got great support on social media. I've got good friends. I've got a great husband, and I'm very strong, and I'm not going to give in to this. I will never be silent on this. And actually, all it's doing is proving that I'm right and that they are wrong, and that they have to resort to this kind of harassment proves that they are weak, very, very weak people.
Wow. Because my question was, and I that's what scares me about the social media. It's very easy to say things, you know, with the anonymity of it. But within, let's say, are people coming up to you face-to-face, whether it's in West Cork or in Dublin, telling you things to your face like that, or?
I have actually, a couple of years ago, in relation to this doctor that, you know, committed suicide, I had a man actually approach me on the street. I was getting into our car. He was calling me a murderer. He was screaming at me. And I was like, look, I was laughing, actually. And he was so angry. His face was purple. His hands were shaking. Then I later found out that he was one of these people that support this quackery. You know, I mean, I live in an area where you know, there's quite a lot of this. And, you know, but I think it's made me stronger, to be honest with you. Okay. A lot of this just rolls off my back. I don't look at a lot of the hate, because if I did, you know, it wouldn't be good for me. It wouldn't be good for my mental health. Mm. But when I get serious threats like I've had recently, like this man on a YouTube video, I, of course, I'm not going to ignore that. Of course, I'm going to be sensible. But the police and the Gardaí, whatever, are aware. Mm. And the problem in Ireland that we have is there's no real law around this kind of online abuse. This is hate speech. I mean, sure. I've had all these people come to me saying, oh, you're denying freedom of speech. This is not freedom of speech. This is hate speech. And we saw what happened in Nazi Germany. And I was actually watching a clip of Hitler the other day, because one of these people that threatened me recently had shared a video of Hitler screaming like a madman, you know, come with me, and, you know, we can't trust the government, and all this vile, you know, hatred for people, everyone. I mean, it wasn't just about Jews. He murdered, disabled people. Mm. And it was really like a lot of the stuff that I'm listening to here in Ireland. Mm-hmm. You know, at these groups, these new parties that are forming, it's the same script. They literally have the same manifesto. And I think we need to stop that, you know. Mm. I don't think we should make the same mistake again. And people are stupid and blind. When Trump was elected, I'll never forget it, you know, my family saying, oh, he'll never get in, you know. I remember waking up that morning thinking, oh, my God, you know, look what he's done. I mean, he's robbing, taking the rights away. They don't want diversity. They don't want people to have equal rights. That's what this equates to. Mm. And we can't let that happen. We have to be very attentive and very much speaking out against this. And that's what I intend to do. And I'm not the only one in Ireland. I mean, even here in West Cork, there's some amazing women that I just want to call out to who went into Skull last night. There's a village there. And these people came down here spreading their message of hate. And there wasn't many of them. I think there was only 16 of them. But the local people told them they didn't want them. And I think that's what we need to do. We need to stand up to the bigotry, and we need to stand up to the quacks, because nothing good will come from it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so the next song you have is the Beatles, Hey Jude. Why did you pick that song?
Well, that's my mum, really. I mean, my mum is wonderful. She's a wonderful woman. And, I mean, I was very lucky as a child. I grew up in a house with great music, you know, the Stones and the Beatles and all this kind of great stuff. And I just see my mum singing that song all the time. And I suppose what I love about Hey Jude is a song of hope, you know. It's really saying, you know, no matter how bad it is, you know, it's going to get better. And my kids are all Beatles fans now. And my when I was a little girl, I collected Beatles albums, records, whatever. And I remember I got the whole lot of them. Of course, they were taken from friends. But I think Hey Jude, what I love about Hey Jude is the ending. It's, you know, I think endings are very important in songs as much as the beginning of a song. And I think you listen to Hey Jude to get to the end, because you know how good it's going to get. And, you know, when you hear Hey Jude, you know, you're lifted up. It's almost like it just moves you to a point where you're, it's going to be all right. And I always have my kid, if one of my children had a bad day in school, I'll put that on. And, you know, it works. It makes you feel better. And I think Paul McCartney and Lennon were, like I said, probably one of the greatest songwriters of our time. So, yeah, a wonderful song.
Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better. Hey Jude, don't be afraid.
You have a very busy life. You have a handful of kids, animals, and your campaign. There's quite a lot going on. How do you unwind? What do you do?
How do I unwind? walking. I mean, I and music, I suppose, are my two things that help me relax. I listen to music all day. I have a Spotify account, and I make playlists, you know, to kind of, you know, I just, music is everything. Writing is, makes me relax, even if I'm writing about the campaign. I completely feel calm when I'm writing. I do a walk where I live. It's quite a big walk, and I'm in an area where there's nothing but wildlife, trees. You know, I regularly see ducks flying, rabbits and everything. So just going out and being around the trees, I get great peace there. And I've befriended a horse near me. And I'm feeding this lovely horse carrots nearly every day now. My husband's given out to me because all the carrots are going. And so really just walking and animals. I have chihuahuas. And one of my dogs, Chico, he's got epilepsy. He's very diverse. They bring great relaxation to me as well. But just being with my family, with the kids, and having a laugh. We love watching movies, comedies. We've got a very good sense of humour, and I think that's really helpful as well. A lot of this I can kind of just laugh at and not take it seriously. I used to enjoy travelling a lot before. I've been to Italy twice, and my children have Italian names, so some of them have. I would love to travel more. It's a lot harder now for the children, but maybe when they're grown up. But all those kind of things, art, history, music. Yeah.
Try to be creative. Stay creative. Stay normal. And tell me something. How are the other children working with the brothers and sisters in terms of their autism? I'm just really curious how workable it is in the situation, you know, your dinner time or whatever, or is it just the standard, you know, different way of dealing with things? Or because it's normal.
I mean, yeah. there's no real. They don't. I mean, like Dylan, my oldest son now would have an intellectual disability as well as a diagnosis of autism. Mm. You know, and Dylan is obviously different. If you met him, you'd know. You know, it would be obvious, but. They don't see that. They just see Dylan. They don't know anything else. So it doesn't even really, Dylan wouldn't sit down much. He likes to kind of walk around and do that. So he might have his food and go for a little walk or come around. That's how he is. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't at all. And I think that's what's so great about children. They don't see that. Okay. They don't. It's grown-ups have the problem. Like if I go out with my son, if we go walking or shopping, sometimes we get weird looks from people. We were at the cinema there not long ago, and there was a woman staring at him, and you know, he was just looking back at her, and I was just thinking, why? Well, what's the point of doing that? And he'd say it to me, what's she looking at? And I said, she's something wrong with her, you know, you've just got to feel sorry for her. You know, some people can be rude, but it's usually adults that are the ones that are like that. And I think we have a very diverse family. You know, there's three autistic people, four neurotypical people, and we get on great together. It's a very healthy environment.
I know, and it's great. It's great to know that, because you're right. I just read an article about Sinead Burke. She did for Vogue, and it was a horrible story. She got hopped on by two teenagers in Grafton Street and O'Connell Street. But the scary thing was the rest of the people wandering beside, and nobody did anything. And the adults around should have intervened, but they didn't, you know. So there is this taboo and being scared of anything that is different from us, you know. And that's why I wanted to know. And tell me something about your writing. What are you writing, anything particular at the moment? Any
yeah,
books?
I've written the book, actually. I mean, I have a blog on WordPress and Tumblr. I have two accounts, so I write, you know, about my experience in the campaign. But no, I've written a children's book with the help of my husband, Tim. He did the editing for me, which I'm trying to get published as we speak. And it's nothing to do with my campaign work. It's about insects, actually. And I suppose it's a little bit like an Animal Farm type of book. It's a book to help children understand the world today, politics and all of these things. But I think children are very confused. For example, my children would come home, and I remember when Trump was elected, they're talking in the playground about that, and they feel very worried about these things, climate change and all of these issues. And I think we need to try and create some kind of a way of telling that to them in a less, you know, grown-up way. So that's what this book is about. I don't want to talk too much about it because I haven't published it yet, but it's written and I've sent it off to publishers as we speak. So it took a year to write, but I'm really happy with it. And it's really sweet and really funny.
Yeah, great. Best of luck with that. Hopefully we'll see it in print soon enough.
I hope so, yeah.
So you have this Amy Mann, Goose No Con. Mm. That's the only song I didn't know of your selection. Tell me about that song.
Well, you need to get some Amy Mann records. Amy Mann, she's an American songwriter. She was in a band called Till Tuesday. She's been going for years. You know, she's not like a really mainstream very much, but she's wonderful. She's probably my favorite female artist, and I have all her albums, and my children too love her, especially my two daughters. I have two girls, Sienna and Phoebe, and I actually got her two more albums when I was in Dublin recently. It's hard to get our stuff, and that song to me is really just about my children, because we did a cover of that on New Year's Eve, not last year, the year before, which we have actually on YouTube. It's a beautiful song, and it's actually about a cat. If you go and watch the video for that, it's about a cat that doesn't that gets ill. It's a beautiful piece of music. The whole album, Mental Illness, it's called, is incredible. She's an amazing artist, but she was involved in the movie Magnolia. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I remember Magnolia, yeah.
Yeah, Tom Cruise was in it, I think, and I can't remember the other actors, but basically the movie kind of was centered around her music, so it was an incredible thing. She ended up at the White House, actually, singing one of the songs off that, and so that's who Amy Mann is, and if you haven't listened to her music, I compel you to do so, because it's really special. She's very unique, and I wanted to come to Ireland again. I missed her the last time. She doesn't come over much, but very good live as well. Looking into the face of the good snow cone. Should be shaking it loose, but you do it alone. Every look is a truce, and it's written in stone.
Stay for a second, the last couple of things, and I'll let you go back to whatever you have planned for today. But you mentioned children. You know, I'm very interested in the children, the young adults, and that's why this little project started. But given your experience with the social media, your Facebook and your Twitter and what have you, what's your approach with your children and social media? How do you deal with it? Are they allowed to?
Well, they're not on it. Okay. I mean, I don't. Particularly Facebook, I don't really like, not to be honest with you, because I think it's great, don't get me wrong, for the campaign, and it's helped, you know, hugely in that area, but there is so much nonsense on there and so much fake stuff and fake pages and bullying. There's a lot of bullying with young people on there, so they're not on Facebook. They don't want to. I'm very lucky, really, because my children are very much into reading books. They're kind of very old-fashioned in many regards, right. So they're really good readers. You know, they know about the dangers, and I think even the guards have gone into schools recently to talk about social media and how to protect yourself online. Like, my oldest son has never really been interested in that at all, so I don't think I'm at a stage where I have to worry, you know. I know that they have friends now that would be more interested in those things, but doesn't really appeal to them, and I've been very much always telling them, you know, the negatives of it. I even for myself, I would much prefer Twitter than Facebook. I just think it's a better place, and I think Twitter are more attentive to complaints. Like, if you report something on Facebook, it's ridiculous. There's like very limited amount of options, and they usually do nothing. So Twitter, for example, I reported this person that was threatening me on Twitter, you know, and they did something about it. Whereas Facebook would go, no, didn't violate our standards, even though you go to their standards and you go, hang on, it did. They need to really change how they operate their platforms, because they're dangerous.
Sure. And in terms of the future, what would you like to see happening in with regards to your campaign? Whether it's from a government, or from, is it policy we're looking at, changing policies, or what is it that we need to make it better work?
You know, I'd like to see happen in the future. I'd like to have more support, you know, really here in Ireland. Like I said, there are great people out there, but we don't have the resources to actually tackle this in a proper way. And I suppose I'm calling on the TDs again. I've travelled to the EU. I've spoken at the EU 2 years ago. I was promised by politicians, oh, we'll do this, we'll do that. my real anger, I suppose, with government and politicians that know about MMS especially, have kind of, you know, allowed children to be hurt. The lack of action has led to more suffering. And I won't forgive them for that. I'm very angered by that. I don't think that voices of autistic people are listened to enough. I don't think the disabled are listened to enough. I think a lot of it is, oh, maybe they won't contribute enough to the society or the community and they can't be bothered. There's not an appetite, I suppose, is the right word, for them to take this seriously. And I want it to be taken seriously. And I've been talking to, you know, we've the elections coming up now. So people, it's funny that how these politicians get much more friendly and interested in you when there are, you know, elections for votes, etc. I'd like to just retire at some point. You know, I'd like to be able to maybe make more time for my music or like writing, you know, etc. But I feel like I'm in a position where I can't walk away from that. Like my mum was saying, please stop, you know, you've done enough. You've done 6 years campaigning. And I have. And I it's not my job, you know, I don't get paid to do this. I do this because I really care about human beings, especially children. It's not even about autism anymore for me. It's about the injustice that I see and about the discrimination. And it's getting worse. You know, it's getting worse because we're allowing these people platforms. If YouTube and Facebook took away the platforms of these quacks, you could literally shut them down because there's nowhere for them to go. Why isn't that happening? And I suppose the Cancer Act that is coming into Ireland is really welcome. But we need something to tackle autism because I believe, and this is very important, people with cancer are very vulnerable. And I've seen people die that have walked away from proper treatments and taken these bogus products. And but autistic children are not sick. Mm. And what makes this really profitable for the charlatans is that they can keep abusing these children because they're not going to die. So they make more money out of autistic children than they do from people that are suffering from cancer, because a lot of people with cancer sadly do die, which is terrible. But autism isn't a disease, and this is the script that they're putting out there. They're actually comparing autism to cancer. I remember Amazon as well. I need to say something about them. You know, they've only in the last month taken down books and, you know, paraphernalia linked to MMS. It's been so hard to push them to do that. And, you know, there was a book on there called I Wish My Son Had Cancer, a father writing about his autistic child wishing that the child had cancer. And this has been not looked at. You see, it has gone unnoticed for so long. So they've gotten away with murder, so to speak, for years and years and years. And myself and other activists have been very vocal and attentive, you know, and pushing and pushing. But it's not easy. And if I was a politician or if I was in a position of power, you know, this would all be done and dusted. Why don't they do that? Why are they not protecting our children? Our autistic children matter. You know, that's what I want to say. And I do it for my boys, too, because I want the future to be safer for them. I want them to be accepted. I want them to have equal rights. I don't want them to be tortured and abused with quack treatments. And I don't think that's much to ask for in 2019.
No, absolutely. Well, you have David Bowie, Rebel Rebel, which is probably a very fitting song for this conversation. Tell me about Rebel Rebel.
My mom, I'm a huge Bowie fan, and I was really, when he died, his last work was really good as well. Ever since I was small, I've been like this. This isn't something that, you know, and I was a little girl in London. I tried to take a homeless man home with me. And my mother was like, oh my God, I was walking down the street. And I said, but this was my logic to my mother. And it made sense. We have a home. He doesn't have a home. Let's give him a home. And I suppose I'm trying to just say that it's good to be a rebel. It's good to ask questions, and it's good to keep, you know, kind of poking the system to make change. But to do it in a way that isn't connected to conspiracy theorists or the Alex Jones types of the world. And I think that's what's happened and what's gone wrong. They're like saying, oh, the government, there is corruption. We know that. There's corruption all around the world, but don't align yourself with quacks and conspiracy theorists. And that's what's gone wrong. That's what we have in America. And it's, you know, spilling over into Europe. And I really think a lot of this is coming from America and from Russia. And And people are beginning to listen to that. They're not listening to educated people anymore. They're not listening to doctors. They're not listening to science. They're listening to some lunatic in a basement on their YouTube channel. And they're getting huge coverage. I mean, this is a frightening thing. Some of these people have millions and millions of viewers. And I've looked at some channels and I'm actually like terrified what I'm looking at. And they're making money as well. A lot of these far right activists have Patreon accounts. Whilst they're talking, you can see the dollar signs popping up in the comments. So it's like an industry for them as well. That needs to stop. We need to deplatform that. Fight corruption. Equality for all. I love that message. But do it in a sensible and factual way.
We are coming towards the end, but you just mentioned something there, and obviously you're campaigning. You've 6 years of campaigning, is a long time, and have you ever thought, I'm sure you've been asked this question before, getting into politics?
Well, I did, briefly. I ran in the election in 2016, and, you know, I had no backing. I wasn't with any party. I've been asked to run now, actually, in local elections, and you know, my mum keeps saying to go for Europe. I don't know. I'm very political, and I've always been interested in politics. But my family really is my priority. Maybe when I'm older, I want to give my attention to them. My kids are, you know, at very important ages now. They're very getting on very well in school. They're doing great. And like next year, my twins will be transitioning into secondary school. So I want to be there for them. And I'm a carer as well. So I don't know how I'd do it. I mean, I think I can do a lot what I'm doing now. And if I became a politician, I don't think I'd be able to do this. Frankly, I would have to toe the line. I would have to, you know, adhere to some manifesto that probably, you know, wouldn't be in agreement with what I'm doing. I think I can actually do more by not being a politician in this. And I have. I've proven it. I've done more than the politicians in relation to MMS in Ireland doing what I do on my own. So... No, I think I'll give it a miss. But I would like politicians out there maybe to work with me and other activists here in Ireland. We have recently, my friend Sinead has given information over to, I think, People Before Profit. They're looking at something. So that's good news. And hopefully one of these parties will help us. You know, that's what we want. We just want people to work with us on this and make change, positive change.
Okay, just the last thing, as a father and a husband, I would love to know, like, you say your husband's very supportive of you. Does he ever tell you, look, Fiona, enough is enough, just give it up and let's, you know, look after our family?
Yeah, he has, and I mean, he does it because, you know, I'm very tired. You know, I've had some health issues as well in the last few years. I got very sick. I had a chronic vitamin D deficiency. I don't mean mild. I was like very, very low. And my eyes, you probably see me wearing the glasses, you know, for the racists listening, I do have an eye disorder because they're always making fun of my glasses, but I'm having an operation soon. So, you know, yeah, of course, because it's hard work, you know, the writing, nobody knows how much work has gone into what we're doing. You know, it's, it can be really just mind-numbingly boring as well, having to repeat over and over again, you know, what you're doing. And it's really heartbreaking, I suppose. That's the sort of thing. It's taken an emotional drain on my, you know, it's broken my heart. It never, ever mend. I'll never, ever get over what I've looked at and what I've seen. You know, sometimes I will just get in the shower and have a good cry. You know, I do that. I keep all this kind of hidden, really, from my children. Oh yeah, but he knows that would never happen because that's who I am. If I were to not do this, then I wouldn't be Fiona. I wouldn't be me. It's part of who I am, and I think, you know, we're born into this world, and you know, you might raise a family or have children, but to me, the meaning of life is to have meaning in your life. It's not just about, you know, cooking dinner, washing clothes, all of that has to be done as well, the practical stuff, but we can all make a difference. You know, you can make a difference. You're making a difference. You know, you're reaching an audience. Do something with your life. Don't think you can't do it. And I suppose that's my message today, that anyone can do what I'm doing. Sure. You know, and yeah, it's hard. And the really hard part is that a lot of autistic people have reached out to me saying that they're afraid. They're afraid to come out and talk about these things because they will be met with the same kind of abuse that I get. And I think that's what makes it really awful, is that they're targeting a community that is really vulnerable in many ways, and they get away with it. I mean, so I really feel like I'm doing a very important role for the autistic community, and it's almost like I was meant to do this. I don't have a choice, you know?
No, absolutely, and fair play to you. That's all I can say. I always ask everybody for a couple of words of wisdom, a quote, or anything that gets you out of bed in the morning. What would you leave us with?
Coffee. What? Yeah, really, really strong coffee. sorry, that made me laugh.
That's
yeah.
Okay.
I suppose, you know, Oscar Wilde, be yourself. Yeah. Everyone else has already taken, you know.
That's
his
fun.
Quotes were always good, weren't they? And
that's fabulous.
And love each other, you know. It doesn't matter what colour you are, what religion you are. We've all got hearts beating in our chest. Respect each other and be kind to each other.
Great. Listen, the last song we're going to leave it is a nice upbeat one, If You Want Blood by AC/DC.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm you know, I have a rocky side too. This song to me is my campaign anthem. And, you know, anytime that I have to go anywhere or if I have to speak, I will play this. Because it starts with, it's criminal. There ought to be a law. And that's exactly what I'm saying about M&S. It is criminal and there ought to be a law. It's just a great song. I mean, AC/DC, I love anyway. I think they had some amazing albums. But that's the first singer, I think. That's on Highway to Hell. Am I right? I don't know. I think it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what a great tune. I mean, if you're feeling like you can't go on anymore and I can't do this campaign work anymore, put that on, turn it up really loud, and you're back in action.
Fiona O'Leary, I really appreciate your time. Best of luck with the campaign and your book and everything else. Keep it going.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks so much. It was great. Very, very refreshing and a lovely interview. Thank you so much.
Lovely, Fiona. I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Bye.
If you have got this far in the podcast, I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share and leave a review on iTunes. It's much appreciated.